7. Lord Nyax felt the distant hunger. Something wanted him. That was all right. He wanted it, too. Anything that was so anxious for him deserved to be encountered. If it would serve him, he would command it. If it would not serve him, he would cut it into pieces. Either solution was just fine with him. Coruscant. The hunting party moved through the depths of Coruscant's ruins. 4 hard-eyed warriors, the scars, implants, and tattoos on their faces like a star map of pain, led the procession, and 4 more brought up the rear. Behind those in front were 2 Voxen handlers, and the leashed Voxen they theoretically controlled. The massive reptilian beasts, low to the ground and rippling with muscle, moved their heads back and forth with every few steps, as though they could see through the wreckage around them and view potential victims hiding before them. Vicky, walking alongside Danua Ku behind them, shuddered. The Voxen were the most ill-tempered and evil things she had ever encountered, Yuuzhan Vong included. At least the Vong could reason, even if their logic was alien. The Voxen had been cloned to sense the Force, to hunt and kill Force-wielders. Many Jedi had fallen to their fangs, their teeth, the corrosive stomach acid they could bring up at a moment's notice. These Voxen didn't look particularly healthy. In places, their dark green scales were fading to a yellow that reminded Vicky of plants withering from lack of sunlight. Though they were alert and had lost none of their intensity, their movements often seemed listless. Not that Vicky would have dared to venture within reach of their teeth or claws. She suspected that either of them would bite her in two just to hear the clack of their teeth meeting in the middle. The party neared the end of a lengthy access corridor. Ahead, a hole in the building's exterior wall admitted dim sunlight and a breeze. 2 Yuuzhan Vong warriors, novices from the lack of decoration their faces carried, stood on duty, 1 to either side of the gap. Raglath Nur, the leader of the hunting party, addressed them. Vicky didn't bother to listen. She knew they'd address her if they needed her. She was correct. After less than a minute, Raglath Nur beckoned her forward to the very lip of the hole. Vicky could lean out and see countless stories of crumbling habitat beneath her, and a simple step forward would send her falling to her death. "This warrior," Raglath Nur said, indicating the novice warrior on the right side, "saw the walkway fall. He was a great distance away. First it erupted in flames, as though from one of the infidel torpedoes. Then it fell. Searching, he found bodies below, burned, some of them in pieces. Explain." If he didn't see a starfighter fire a missile or torpedo, then it was probably a bomb, Vicky said, indifferent to his curiosity. "Something like a torpedo, but carried by a man, put into position, and then persuaded to explode a few seconds later. Seconds in which the one who planted it runs to safety." "And?" "And what?" Raglath Nur drew a hand back as if to strike her. Vicky steeled herself against the blow. But Danua Ku positioned his amphistaff between them. "He means, what do you conclude?" Danua Ku said. "You are here for your knowledge of infidels, their tactics." "Yes, yes," Vicky fumed, but thought about it. "The bomb didn't just blow a hole in the walkway. It took the whole thing down and singed both edges. I conclude that it wasn't an improvised weapon. Either the people who did it had access to military equipment, or they're proficient at building such things. This suggests that they're not ordinary survivors. They're elites of some sort."
"Jedi?" asked Raglath Nur.
Vicky shook her head. "I don't know if Jedi are among them, but Jedi don't normally use high explosives. So this was something different, or something additional." "What else?" "If I were in their situation and had to use an explosive device, something sure to give away my position, I'd move away from here very fast, to elude any Yuuzhan Vong parties that came to investigate, meaning that if we can figure out the route they took, we could search it thoroughly and see if they dropped anything. If they dropped something, we might obtain more information." How will we know the difference between an infidel object left here by the planet dwellers and one dropped by your elites? Vicky shrugged. I will know, she lied. The party's searches turned up no objects that Vicky felt had been dropped by their prey, but as they reached the next building over in the direction the trackers felt the infidels had traveled, the Voxen became more alert. They left off the eternal searching sweeps of their heads. Instead, they both stared in one direction, outward and downward, the muscles of their necks tense, while their tails began to lash. Ragleth Nur allowed the Voxen and their handlers to take the lead. The Voxen led them at a quickened pace. Vicky had to struggle to keep up, and was often prodded by Danua Ku when he felt her progress was not sufficient. But the Voxen did not understand the city's architecture, and it required the Yuuzhan Vong, and sometimes Vicky, to guide them down stairwells, ramps, and even turbolift shafts, as they rushed toward their prey. Deeper and deeper they descended into the ruins, and when they had not run down their prey within half an hour, Ragleth Nur demanded, "Is our quarry running? Can they be aware of us?" Vicky shook her head and took a moment to breathe. She tamped back on her resentment. A merchant, princess, and senator of Kuok should not have to exert herself in this unseemly fashion. The Voxen detect the force, correct? Perhaps what they're detecting is very strong and far away. Ragleth Nur offered up a noise of vexation, but it was, for a member of the Yuuzhan Vong warrior caste, sufficiently mild that Vicky suspected he had come to the same conclusion, that he had merely hoped Vicky would offer some more satisfying answer. Another half hour put them much farther down in the building level. From the general atmosphere of antiquity and seediness, from the drip rot that afflicted the Duracrete walls, from the stench of decay and increased incidence of corrupting bodies, Vicky could tell that they were nearly at bedrock level. They passed a side corridor that sloped downward. It was mostly filled with dark liquid and bodies floating atop it. Vicky skidded to a halt and turned back to give it a second look, putting her hand over her nose and mouth as if to reduce the stench. Danua Ku joined her, and other warriors turned back to see what had drawn her curiosity. She pointed at one of the bodies. "Get that one," she said. Danua Ku and one of the others splashed into the water. The body, Vicky had pointed out, raised its head. He was a male human, young and frightened. He scrambled around in the shallow water and tried to dive away, but Danua Ku caught him by the ankle and yanked. He dragged the screaming, flaming youth back up to the dry cross corridor, then hauled him up by the collar of his tunic and held him against the corridor wall. "How did you know?" Ragleth Nur asked. Vicky gave him a superior smile. He wasn't bloated like the rest. "Question him," Danua Ku ordered. Vicky sighed, then turned to their prisoner. The young man was obviously terrified, but knew better than to struggle now that he was surrounded by Yuuzhan Vong warriors. He had long black hair. Dark fluid from the pool they'd hauled him from ran from it, pouring from his garments to puddle on the floor. Vicky reflected that in better circumstances he would have been pretty enough to serve her as a toy. "Where are the Jedi?" she asked. The young man shook his head. "I don't know about Jedi." Vicky gave him a chill smile. "These warriors would like to kill you. In fact, killing you fast is one of the nicest things they're considering doing to you. So you'd better find some reason, any reason, to give me so I can persuade them not to. Do you understand?" The young man nodded. "I know something. I'm going to take something out. Don't kill me." He reached into a pants pocket. The Voxen roared and surged farther down the corridor, dragging their handlers behind them, drawing the attention of the other Yuuzhan Vong warriors. The young man held out his hand. Vicky reached for him, and he dropped something into her outstretched palm. "It's the ugly—" "Our prey is close," Ragleth Nur said. "We don't need him." Vicky turned toward him and crossed her arms, a gesture she hoped would hide the object the prisoner had given her. "I'm not through." But Danua Ku exerted himself
and Vicky heard the snap of the young man's neck. Danuaku dropped the corpse back into the dark pool.
Now he will bloat.
Vicky glared at him. Ragleth Noor set the warriors into motion, following the frantic Voxen.
What did the human want to show you?
Vicky shrugged. I might have found out if Danuaku hadn't been so quick to exterminate him. She waited until Ragleth Noor's attention was on the Voxen before she tucked the object out of sight under the neckline of her robe skin. She got a glimpse of it before it was concealed. It seemed to be a tiny remote, one with a pair of buttons on one side, another button and a screen so small as to be nearly useless on the other. The ugly what?
The handlers, dragged by the Voxen, were first to pass through the ruined metal doors, which were three times the height of a human and broad enough to permit 10 pedestrians walking side by side. The lettering above the door read, Elegiac Fabrications, the comfort you deserve.
Ragleth Noor paused outside the doorway and stared with suspicion at the darkness beyond. He whirled on Vicky.
What is this?
A manufacturing plant, she said. They manufacture furnishings. Very expensive, very functional furnishings.
Such as what?
Such as chairs that convert into extravagantly comfortable beds. Chairs that carry their owners about in the air. Furnishings that massage those who sit in them.
Massage?
Evidently that didn't translate well through Ragleth Noor's teasel-worm.
Inflict pain?
Inflict pleasure. The warrior gave her a revolted look and led his fellows into the darkness. Vicky, alongside Danuaku, followed. Though the manufacturing concern had seemed pitch black from outside, once her eyes began adjusting, Vicky discovered that it was not so. There were light sources everywhere, but dim ones, mostly at floor level. Emergency lighting, she decided, probably running low on battery power. In the faint glows from the light sources, she could see looming production line machinery and immobile fabricator droids, some of them huge. She wondered if any samples of their stock were still in existence, but doubtless her Yuuzhan Vong companions would not let her enjoy such a chair, not even for a moment. She heard the Voxen's hisses go from excited to ferocious, heard their handlers call after them as they yanked leashes free from the handlers' grips.
Jedi! Called one of the warriors. Now you die!
Vicky heard the distinctive snap hiss of a Jedi lightsaber igniting. One point on the far wall of the manufacturing chamber and the ceiling above it were illuminated by red light, moving light. The claws of the Voxen scrabbled as they charged for their prey. Then there was another snap hiss, and another, and another. The distant red glow brightened. Vicky saw the silhouette of a Voxen leaping high, vaulting intervening machinery, backlit by the glow, and then something rose to meet the Voxen in mid-flight. It was not a Jedi, not a lightsaber blade. A block of machinery 2 meters on a side flew up from below and crashed into the leaping Voxen, striking with such force that Vicky heard the creature's bones shatter. The impact smashed the Voxen back through the air, a wobbly caricature of a once-living beast. The Voxen's body crashed onto the factory's duracrete floor, and the block of machinery landed upon it, breaking more bones, and stuck there, not bouncing or rolling forward as it should have.
"Forward," Danuaku said.
He whipped his amphistaff free from his waist and charged after the other Yuuzhan Vong warriors, who now howled in rage and anticipation. Vicky took 2 steps into Nuaku's wake, and then something crashed into her, took her from her feet, slapped her to the duracrete. It was not a physical thing. It was despair and hatred, loathing and worthlessness, fear and howling rage. It was as though Vicky had spent every one of her years packing all the hateful emotions an ordinary person felt into a storeroom, and suddenly all the pressure had burst through the door and swept her away. She could only lie there, her arms and legs twitching outside her control, her stomach rebelling, her heart hammering inside her. She heard the howl of the second Voxen, heard the ripping noise of the creature vomiting its acid at its prey. Then there was the sound of lightsabers swinging, hacking, meat in great quantities slapping down on the Duracrete. Vicky writhed in time with the war cries of the Yuuzhan Vong, and one by one she heard them die under the almost musical tones of the lightsabers. Then there was only the sound of lightsabers cutting and cutting and cutting. The emotional agony that had gripped Vicky lessened only a little. She managed to roll over onto her stomach, and slowly, painfully, came upright. She knew the beings on the other side of the chamber had just killed everything that had entered the chamber with her. She wanted nothing more than to charge at them, to rip them to pieces with her bare hands. But as she stood, some faint instinct of self-preservation rose within her, and one thought, made up of words, emerged: run or die. She turned toward the doorway and lurched out toward the light. As she reached the doorway, she put her hand out to steady herself against the metal door that had once protected the factory's interior. It fell away from her grip, crashing down onto the Duracrete with a tremendous clang. The lightsabers in the distance switched off. Vicky froze. She waited, ears straining at the sudden silence. Then she heard it. The padding of feet coming her way. A noise like a sob escaped her, and she ran, her speed enhanced by adrenaline and fear. Luke came awake and rose in a single smooth motion. He didn't have to ask if Mara had felt it too. She was awake, gripping her lightsaber, ready to ignite it. Luke stepped out into the corridor. It was dimmed for sleeping, but Danny, too, was emerging, and Tahiri, who had been on guard in the corridor as the others slept, stared into one wall, through the wall, at something that was far away and toward the ground. "It's there again," she said, her voice faint. Luke took a few deep breaths. He couldn't remember what he had just been dreaming, only that, for a moment, he had been filled, even saturated, with a desire to rise and kill every living thing in his vicinity. Absurdly, he still felt loathing and contempt for his companions, for his wife. But as his mind and memory struggled to assert themselves, those emotions began to fade. "What did you feel?" he asked. Tahiri shook her head, and Luke could finally see the lone tear flowing down her farther cheek. "Awfulness," she said. "More awful than when I was coming out of my conditioning and started to figure out what I'd almost become. It was all through me, through the Force. It almost had control of me. I think maybe it could have had control if it had known I was here." The despair in her voice was heartbreaking. None of the wraiths had emerged from their new quarters. That made sense. This was a Force sending, a Force problem. And the wraiths, largely oblivious to the Force, were not troubled. Mara dressed, moved down the corridor, rapping on doors. "Everyone up. Get into your armor. It's time to hunt." 4 stories up from the manufacturing chamber, Vicky came off a pedestrian ramp at a dead run. Her legs trembled from her flight, but she could not afford to rest. She'd heard her pursuers crash through doors she'd dragged shut behind her. She rounded a bend in the corridor, and abruptly there was an arm in front of her, stretched at just under neck height. She hit it at full speed, her legs going out from under her, and suddenly she was on her back, looking into 2 human faces, illuminated by dim glow rods, at 2 blaster pistols pointed at her face. It was a man and a woman. The man had an ill-trimmed beard. The woman's eyes were startlingly pretty blue, in eerie contrast to her unsympathetic expression. The 2 stank, and seemed as thin as plasteel support beams. "Look at you," the man said.
"About 50 kilos, I'd guess," the woman said. "Good eating, looks like."
"How'd you stay so clean?"
"Never mind that. Just kill her."
There was a distant noise, a low-pitched roar that raised the hair on Vicky's arms and the nape of her neck. The man and woman hesitated,
Looking back, the way Vicky had come, then it washed across her again, the feeling of hatred and lowness that had brought her down in the manufacturing chamber. It had the same effect on the man and woman. They paled and sank to their knees, the woman gagging, perhaps prevented from vomiting only by near starvation. Vicky scrambled around on the floor, turned toward her original direction of flight, and crawled as fast as paralysis gripping her arms and legs would let her. It occurred to her that it would be better to dive than flee, better to face her tormentors rather than have to continue running, but the rational side of her mind, forcing its way to the forefront, kept her moving. She made it a few meters, until the curve in the corridor made it impossible to see the man and woman. She heard them scream, heard the snap hiss of lightsabers igniting. There was a maintenance panel ahead of her, set in the wall at ground level. She reached it and tugged at its handle. It resisted, probably held in place by simple magnetic bolts or locks. She put all her slight frame into it, yanking, and the panel came loose. Her effort sent the panel skittering across the floor. Beyond the new hole was a vertical shaft, not more than a meter in diameter, steel rungs making a ladder of the far side. Vicky crawled into the shaft and climbed. Her arms and legs trembled, threatening every instant to fail her. She heard the man and woman scream again, then heard the noise of lightsabers chopping. As she ascended, the noise faded, but the fear and loathing did not. By Luke's chrono, it had taken them 4 hours to find the first evidence of a thing or things they sought. They stood in the main manufacturing chamber of a furnishing concern and looked down at the dismembered bodies of Yuuzhan Vong warriors and Voxen. It was not evidence or deduction or luck that had led them here. Luke and the other Jedi could feel lingering dark side energy imbued in the walls, the machines, the corpses. The sensation, so like what Luke had experienced within a certain cave on Dagobah, caused the hair on the back of his neck to rise. Mara dispassionately looked at the body of a Yuuzhan Vong warrior who had been cut into at least 8 pieces. The wounds were all burned, cauterized. Our dark Jedi again, or whatever they are. Dark Jedi might be able to impose their will on normal people, Tahiri said. She had her arms crossed, and Luke suspected her pose was an effort to keep herself from trembling. But not on fully trained Jedi. This was like jumping into an ocean of the dark side of the Force. It was like feeling Anakin die again, and wanting again to die with him. More tears came, and she looked away so that the others would not see them. "I wonder," Luke said, "what it's going to be like to confront them face to face." He prodded a severed Yuuzhan Vong leg with his toe. He hadn't always done well when faced with the dark side. "The Yuuzhan Vong are invisible to the Force. They couldn't feel it. We aren't, especially the Jedi." "I had a thought on that." Face was on guard duty, blaster rifle in hand, his attention on the entryway. "A tactic I've used from time to time in bad situations." "What's that?" Luke asked. "Snipers. Set up a couple of kilometers away in a blind with a laser rifle and someone who really knows how to use it. And when your enemy wanders by, zap." Luke smiled. "Not exactly fair." "Who wants to be fair?" Vicky woke up in absolute blackness and thought for a moment that she might be dead. In a panic, she sat up. But before she came upright, her head banged into something, resulting in a sharp pain to her forehead and a hollow metallic noise. Then she remembered. She'd climbed and climbed, hearing the roars and the lightsaber hums of her pursuit. Her pursuers had cut their way through durasteel bulkheads to follow her, but she'd found side channels from the access duct, ventilation ducts that were smaller and smaller. Adequate for a diminutive Kuat woman, but too constricting for whatever followed her. After a long time of groping along in the dark, she had let exhaustion overcome her. Now she was alone, weaponless and friendless, surrounded by kilometers of crumbling durocrete and metal in all directions. Not to mention thirsty, hungry, and blind. She forced herself to become calm, and went through a ritual checklist that helped her regain control of whatever situation troubled her. "Checklist," she began. "One extravagantly capable political strategist whose skills are of no use here. One Yuuzhan Vong robe skin, a living garment, whose sole virtue is that it's better than running around naked and matching foot wraps. That's about it." That wasn't quite it. She'd been given something a million years ago, shortly before starting her run. She dug around under the robeskin neckline and held the object that pretty doomed boy had handed her. It fit her palm, so that a button fell under her thumb. There were two others on the reverse side. She pressed the first button. A tiny red screen lit up on the remote, illuminating her surroundings. A sheet metal duct, layered with dust, a meter wide by half a meter high. The screen showed a wire-frame sphere with one bright red dot at its center and another at one point on its circumference. She slowly rotated her hand and saw the second dot move around, always staying at the circumference, always pointed in the same cardinal direction. It was a location finder of some sort. A distant object transmitted a regular signal, and this device always pointed in the direction of that object. She pressed one of the buttons on the reverse side. The wireframe image disappeared, replaced by the words, "Out of range." She pressed the last button. The device spoke with the voice of a woman. "Remember, pick up a new charge for the speeder, and we're having dinner with the Tussons tonight." Vicky supposed that the recording would have depressed someone of less personal strength. She didn't even bother to wonder how dinner had gone. The woman who'd recorded the message was gone, either crushed or vaporized or in some slavering idiot stew pot, and her sole virtue was that one of her possessions was now going to benefit Vicky Shesh. Whatever it might lead to, it was, for now, a light source. She rolled over onto her stomach, shining the light in front of her, and began crawling. Vicky stood at the center of what had once been a large living chamber, centerpiece of the apartment of some wealthy business family. There were numerous doors and hallways off this chamber, all leading to bedchambers, refreshers, recreation areas, all now wrecked by looters and invasive plant life. To Vicky's right, a few meters away, was a huge hole in the wall that had once been a viewport half again the height of a man, and twice as broad as it was high. Now creepers growing on the building's face hung over the gap, and pieces of shattered transparisteel littered what had once been heated flex carpet. Fungus was everywhere, grayish, mushroom-like growths that were larger toward the hole. She'd stepped on one of the tiny ones, and it had detonated beneath her foot, making her instep very sore and damaging the living foot wrap she wore. She was careful not to touch any more, and it was clear that much of the damage to the chamber had come about because of the fungi. Obviously, many of them had exploded over the last several weeks. Perhaps vibrations in the crumbling buildings set them off. Perhaps they simply detonated when they reached a certain size. The wall in front of Vicky was ferrocrete that had once been decorated, its utilitarian strength disguised, by a thick layer of flexible sheeting decorated in a starfield pattern. Attached to building power, the sheet's stars and nebula would glow. Now the sheeting hung in strips. She'd torn most of it away and could find nothing beyond but ferrocrete. On the other side of it was another crumbling skyscraper. In her explorations, she'd managed to get onto the corresponding floor of that building, but on its far side, collapsed hallways and walls had prevented her from getting closer. The tracking device had led her here, and this was the point that was closest to whatever it indicated. On the little screen, the white dot representing that object, and the dot indicating her current position were almost 1 point. She shrugged. So she hadn't been able to find her way to the object. It might just be a matter of ascending one floor, descending one, searching more diligently to find the spot that gave her access. Then she remembered the out-of-range message she'd received. She held up the remote and depressed that button again. There was a noise, a faint ponk of some mechanical apparatus being activated from above her head. She looked up and then jumped aside just in time to avoid a descending ceiling panel. Its bottom edge came down to rest against the floor. She moved around to look up. It was a set of metal stairs, narrow and without rails, leading up into darkness. Breath catching in her throat, she hurried up the staircase. She found herself in a narrow, low corridor that led for 3 meters straight to the wall she had found so impassable, straight to a corresponding gap in that wall, a gap that was lit from the other side. Before moving on, she looked around and found a small button control by the top of the hidden staircase. She pressed it, and the stairs rose, locking into place behind her. The gap in the wall opened into a cylindrical chamber a few meters across. Occupying most of the chamber, resting on its stern, was a vehicle about 12 meters long, squat at its stern, and tapering toward the bow, all in the uniform deep matte blue that made it difficult for Vicky to make out details of its hull. There were protrusions everywhere, plates and hemispherical antennae and maneuvering or braking flaps. The floor of this chamber was some 4 meters below Vicky's feet. She stood directly opposite a hatch that opened into the vehicle's interior, one-third of the distance from the stern. The thing looked like some sort of oversized military land speeder, enclosed to protect its crew. But since it rested on its tail, with no machinery evident to allow it to be lowered into a horizontal position, Vicky suspected that it was equipped for flight. She could not tell if it was an atmospheric vehicle or spaceworthy. On the side was stenciled the vehicle's name, Ugly Truth. She looked up. The cylindrical chamber continued upward another 30 meters beyond the vehicle's nose, ending in a jumble of fallen metal beams and diorite blocks. Vicky could see faint sunlight through that deadfall. Scarcely able to believe her good fortune, she moved forward across a narrow span of metal that gave her access to the open hatch, and clambered into the vehicle. As the vehicle was resting at a 90-degree angle to its intended orientation, when she stepped down from the hatch, she stood on what was obviously meant to be the main cabin's rear bulkhead. A crudely constructed ladder of spare metal parts, wired together, allowed her to climb up to the pilot seat at the bow. Under her touch, the secondary power switch engaged without hesitation or resistance. The cabin lights came up. The vehicle's navigation computer went through its power-up sequence. Vicky felt a slow, wondering smile spread across her face. This was an emergency evacuation vehicle, cunningly hidden away in the event of disaster, but its owners had not been able to get to it in time as Coruscant fell. Perhaps they had died. Perhaps they had been off-world already. Who was the youth who'd given her the locator? Son of the vehicle's owners? A builder who'd known and kept the secret of this hidden chamber and later intended to use the vehicle when it became clear that its owners would be unable to? He'd probably been prevented from escaping by the collapse of the access above him. Perhaps he'd been working all this time to dig his way clear of that obstacle. Now he was dead, and the vehicle was hers. She was free of the Yuuzhan Vong and in possession of an escape from their world. A thought hit Vicky, and her hands fell away from the controls. If this vehicle was designed as a last-ditch opportunity for survival, perhaps it was carrying... She scrambled down the makeshift ladder to the vehicle's stern. A hatch into the stern compartment lay at her feet. She struggled with its locking bar and then hauled the heavy hatch open. Below was a storage compartment with restraining nets to either side, and a hatch at the far end. Doubtless the hatch gave access to the vehicle's thrusters. Vicky didn't care. Her attention was riveted by what she saw in the nets. Rations, military rations, carefully packed into individual meals, guaranteed to survive for years on the shelf. With a moan, she clambered down into the compartment, grabbed the nearest meal at hand, and tore into the wrapping flimsy around it.